Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Bobby Ray Hall Honda of State College. Visit us at our West College Avenue showroom or at BobbyRayHallHondaOfStateCollege.com. Allow us to demonstrate our commitment to excellence. Bobby Ray Hall Honda of State College, driven by a higher standard.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I am Jim Galante along with Landon Tangwall. Landon, my friend, how we doing after the 4th of July weekend? Did you have a good one?
I had a great one, Jim. A lot of hot dogs, burgers, pool, some summer shandies. I've talked about how much I think people think we're sponsored by Summer Shandy, but I keep bringing it up now that Jim got me to like beer. And I'm a big Summer Shandy guy now. So I had a great weekend, though, floating in the pool, and we had some good weather. Great fireworks and stuff like that, too.
We're close to working together for a year, and the highlight, the headline of our friendship is, I got you to drink beer.
That is, I mean, if that's the highlight of a friendship, I think that's a damn good friendship.
I'm saying it with pride, Lincoln.
Yeah. We got a lot more tailgates and things like that to go, Jim. So it was well worth it. I'm glad we got it out of the way early.
Oh, don't you worry. Come fall, we'll be tailgating together, having lots of fun. And our show, by the way, Landon, is brought to you by some more good friends, the folks over at Bobby Ray Hall Honda of State College, where you can find their great inventory of new Hondas, just like my Honda CRV. They also have some great financing deals on the Honda Civic. They have, someday it's going to be your car, Landon, the Ridgeline truck. Again, my friend, you look fantastic in it when you were ready to drive away with it. They are all available at Bobby Ray Hall Honda of State College. Check out their showroom. It's on West College Avenue. Or you can go online, see everything that they have there at BobbyRayHallHondaOfStateCollege.com. They will take care of you. All right, Landon, our calendar has changed over. We're now in July. And today's show, we've got kind of like just a news and notes kind of show, several different topics. But the first thing I want to hit on, it is July. As fans were saying, once it gets past 4th of July, that's time for me to start thinking about the season coming up. What does July mean, though, to the players?
Yeah, it's that last time off before you are in the season, 6 months, no break, all go, no breaks, none of it. So it's kind of that last time. Guys are on vacation. Guys, if you look around on guys' Instagrams, I don't know how much of our listeners are on Instagram or Facebook, but if you go on the guys' Instagram, you'll see they're on vacation. They're kind of relaxing. Golf outings. A lot of guys had charity golf outings. Actually, the first week of July, Dom DeLuca, Nick Dawkins. I saw a couple different guys. So it's cool. Everybody's getting out there doing NIL events. That's also kind of a big thing. It's a month where you can pack in as many NIL events because August, they kind of go off the map. You're off the grid as a college football player because you are just trying to survive. You don't really have time to think about NIL. You are just trying to live and make it to the season. So you kind of all that stuff kind of goes away. So everybody's trying to fit in those last events and appearances before the season starts. But it's more of a relaxing time for the players. I'd say you almost have half the month of July off. The back end of July is when everybody starts to get back. The coaches have off too. So there's really no one in and around the facility. So it's that time. You know, some guys will stay around. I think they still have off for another couple of days. I'm playing golf actually after this today with a couple guys on the team. But so some guys stick around. They'll go in and kind of get some lifts in. They're not mandatory at all, but go in, work out, just kind of continue to keep your body right. Because you also want to be careful. You don't want to put in all that work in May, June, and then have a bunch of time off in July and just eat whatever, not work out. I mean, that's kind of a nightmare situation headed into the season. So a lot of guys stick around even when they have that time off, or maybe even just go home for a couple of days, come back, and then, you know, just be in and around State College and immerse yourself in it. A lot of guys like the summer. We love the summer as players because nobody is up here. As soon as August 15th hits, Jim, it is just students, games come around, and it's just a ton of people back in State College. So you kind of also enjoy those last moments where the tee times are not booked up. There's no lines downtown. There's no traffic. It's all good times in State College. So the guys are really enjoying themselves right now in the month of July.
Yeah. Anyone who's been in the State College during the summer knows it's fantastic. It's easy to get around, find parking spots downtown, hit the bars. a lot of good things. But what you're saying is for the players, you don't want to start eating all those hot dogs and hanging out at the pool, right?
Yeah, yeah. Obviously, if you're offensive defensive lineman, you can get away with it a little bit more. But yeah, you do have to be careful. There are all those times where if you go home for a week and let's say you don't really have a gym at home, you can kind of get into that routine of saying, I really need to chill. And now there is times where if you hit it really hard, like test week, Losey, the head strength coach, he says, hey, I want you guys to go home, maybe work out once over this next 5 days, but I want it to be light. This is meant for you guys to relax. So you are supposed to take some time for yourself, but there is that fine line that you do not want to cross where you're up at 2 a.m. eating grilled stickies, watching Netflix gym every single night without working out. You want to stay away from that type of behavior.
You know
about that life, huh? 2 a.m. grilled stickies?
For the last 40 years, Landon. What I wonder too about is the mindset getting off me. Okay, that's not a good topic. And Jim's diet during the summer. But if you're a player, what is the mindset of the freshmen, the kids who, for some of them, they arrived in the spring, so they got a taste of it. But what if it's like, okay, you really haven't. This is your last break before you get into August. Are you anxious, scared, nervous? Are you working out like crazy? What is it like for the youngsters?
Yeah, there's definitely that anxiety of just let's get to the camp, because there's a lot of guys that came in June too. So if you had that spring ball, if you came in back in January as a freshman and you already, Grunkmeyer and those guys that were here, the camp isn't as difficult. And honestly, things come in a little bit slower. I remember my first camp, everything just moved a lot slower than it did when I first came in spring ball. I mean, spring ball, it's like everything's moving 100 miles per hour. You're kind of looking left, looking right, and everything goes past you. So there is that advantage for those guys that came in early this camp. There's not as much of that anxiety, of that like unsureness where it's like, okay, I don't really know what to expect. You know how practices run for the most part. You know how to expect the coaches to act and just kind of how everything is going to shape up. When you haven't really had a true college football practice yet, it is much different. So that's why I think it's really impressive when guys that come in June end up getting true playing time their freshman year, just because they don't have that time to develop and get comfortable. And I think those type of guys, especially, and we've seen in the past, like a Parker Washington, a Jahan Dotson, I forget the name of him. I don't follow recruiting super close, but we have like a big time 4-star wide receiver, I believe, that's coming in. And people were asking me, he's coming in June. How is that? What is that going to look like? Can he still make an impact? So not to say that he can't, but I do think it is a lot more difficult. But if someone does start to make an impact, especially in those earlier games, and we see some younger cats start to get some playing time, it is really impressive to me. But it is, Jim. It's these guys, these kids, they're running around like chickens with their head cut off on that first day of camp. They don't know what's going on. And the coaches almost have this like sickness of them where it's like it's fun to like yell at them because they know they're like, they're little kids. They're like, well, what's going on? And they just, they don't know what's going on. They just yell at them and kind of laugh a little bit. It's fun to watch. And everybody laughs because everybody's been there. Most of the coaches played. They've been there. So it's a little bit of a rite of a passage. But it is really difficult for those freshmen to adjust because high school practices are severely different than college football practices.
Well, you're going to get that rude awakening at some point. It's like, welcome to college, welcome to big time college football moment. But you mentioned about, wide receivers coming in now versus coming in the spring. What positions actually lend themselves, Landon, to a true freshman coming in and playing?
Yeah, I think that I'd say, as far as how difficult it is.
Yeah, we saw a couple years ago, two true freshmen really take off as true freshmen.
Sure.
But just as a quick aside, if you go back and watch the early games from that season, they weren't necessarily the starters.
Right. Yeah, I do think it depends on your position group, really. I mean, there's something like we talk about the running backs with Nick and Katron really excelling early on. I think we had a pretty good veteran offensive line that was blocking for them. So, similar thing, we're going to have some young DBs. Is it, if the D-line can get a lot of pressure, that makes their life a lot easier and you're able to succeed a little bit more. But I do think there's certain positions that it's just more difficult to succeed early. I think something like cornerback, offensive line, one offensive line because it's so difficult. It's so physical when you're going, you know, against 15, 14-year-old kids, and now you're an 18-year-old kid. Now you're going against Smith Vilbert, who's 23 years old, or, you know, someone at Ohio State who has been there for 4 or 5 years. That is a completely different game. So I think that adjustment from offensive and even defensive line standpoint, but then from like cornerback, you're just sometimes you're put out on an island. And I think there is that the coaches can help you a little bit. They can scheme something up to where you are not put at that disadvantage, but sometimes it's going to happen in that position. So I think putting, you know, testing a young cornerback at early on against, especially like maybe a good wide receiver, you play a USC, a UCLA, they pass a lot. You know, that's a really good challenge, I think, for a young cornerback. But some of those positions where you can get put at a quick disadvantage, I think can be really hard to adapt. But I'm excited. I think we got a couple guys that are young at those positions. We talked about Cooper Cousins at center, definitely going to get some burn early on, Jim. So I'm excited to see what someone like that, who we've talked about, is pretty ready to go from a standpoint of physicality, from his understanding of the game, X's and O's. His football IQ is there. He passes that test. So I'm excited to see some of these young guys in the positions that I just said were difficult. Let's see them excel. And I think that can turn into some young leaders for a team that overall is pretty young, Jim.
Well, I always had the impression, you know, certain positions, running back, it's such a natural thing. You know, you run this way or run that way. And sometimes, yes, you got to pick out the correct hole. But I always thought, like, you mentioned offensive line. It's a thinking man's position, but you also better be physically prepared.
Absolutely, it is. You have to be so ready for things to move. If you ever watch a defensive line, they do a lot of stunts, and sometimes we call it games, where they are moving around. They're one guy's picking the guard, the other guy's going around him. You have to have your head on a swivel, but also be able to block a 300-pound man, Jim. So it's not exactly easy. And it's 300-pound dudes that are not just big fat guys. I mean, they are strong. Jim, I mean, I want you to try to get up under Zane Durant. See if you can lift that up and move that man. It's not very easy. So, you know, there is that physicality. But, yeah, a lot of people don't think about the mental standpoint of an offensive lineman. I don't even think it's close. Compare that to, like, a cornerback, a wide receiver. Now, there are certain things that, you know, there's things that they have to worry about. But for the most part, they know what they're doing. You know, certain things are indicative of other positions. You kind of have to watch, okay, he's moving here. Let me rotate over here as a wide receiver, DB. But it's just a lot easier. Offensive lineman, you have to make a full speed decision, and it is a collision, a car crash right there the second you decide. So it is hard. And when you're a young, indecisive kid, it doesn't work out well. So that's why you don't see very many young offensive linemen, just because being indecisive on the offensive line, it doesn't work.
All right, Landon, that is it for quarter number one. We got lots more to go. Stick around.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, general manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.
Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Bobby Rahal Honda of State College. Visit us at our West College Avenue showroom or at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com. Allow us to demonstrate our commitment to excellence. Bobby Rahal Honda of State College, driven by a higher standard.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Landon Tengwall. I'm Jim Galante. We are talking Penn State football. I just wanted to follow up on the one thing you said, Landon. You asked me about getting low and moving Zane Durant. Getting low is not a problem, okay? I've got a low center of gravity. Moving him would be the issue, okay? Getting low, not so much.
I know, Jim. I don't know. Maybe you could have been offensive line in your past days. But, yeah, it is. I think people underestimate the fact of, especially playing guard and center, being that close. If you ever just take a look and just notice how close these guys are to us on that interior of the offensive line, it is really difficult to move them off the line. And they are kind of in a three-point stance where they are ready to go firing out of their stance. We're a little more even in an even-keeled stance. Now, sometimes we'll get some double teams on them, but it is not easy going against, especially veteran guys like Devon Elise, Hakeem Beamon. When you go against someone who's in their sixth year, They got those veteran tricks. They have a feel for the game that just a younger guy just doesn't have. So it is, it's not easy, especially going against our defensive tackles.
Well, it is, you mentioned earlier, it's a collision essentially on every play. But I also wonder, like in pass coverage, you're actually backing up, like you're on your heels a bit, and you have this 300-pound guy coming full force. He's coming forward while you're going backwards. That's a little tough on the offensive side. I think that makes the offensive line tougher than the defensive line.
It is. You have, I've always said that. It's like no one actually talks about what offensive line is. Going backwards while blocking a 300-pound man coming full speed at you. I mean, when you describe offensive line like that, it's like you are insane. What sport is that in? Who has to do that? It's like, yeah, look right here. That's what we have to do. It is, yeah, it's not fun. And especially, I mean, I remember like Michigan, they had some dudes. I don't know if you remember Mozzie Smith. I believe yes. He plays on the Cowboys. Actually turned out, allegedly, I'm not sure if this is fully, but allegedly that there was some type of gun charge while he played. So it was like, and he's this big, scary dude with a big old beard. And he was like 330. I mean, immovable, excuse me. And it's just not easy to go against those type of guys, especially when they have their hands are kind of defined. It's not fun at all. Chris Jenkins at Michigan, Mason Grant. They got a lot of guys at Michigan. I'm glad that our interior does not have to go against that this year. They still got some dudes over there, Jim.
Well, since doing this job, I've started, you know, I watch games, the tape of the game after watching the game. And I'll look for stuff that I never looked for, which was line play on the offensive line. And it's, as you said, it's a collision every down. It's a violent play every down. You see the helmets all marked up from collisions. Hand work. You've shown me one of your fingers that doesn't go the direction it's supposed to go. What I'm surprised is that you don't have 10 fingers that are that way, Landon, after you know what you have to deal with on every play.
Yeah, Jim, I've seen some offensive linemen who I do think offensive linemen have the most messed up hands. If anybody remembers, it's probably better for our older audience, but Anthony Munoz, the legendary offensive tackle for the Bengals, he was, I remember I saw him on Family Feud, and he went to shake the guy's hand. You know, you go up to the buzzer, and you shake the other person's hand you're going against, and you saw his hand, and it was like, what is that? Like, what did your hand go through, like a meat shredder? What's going on? And he's talked about it. It's like, yeah, that's kind of the world you live in when you're an offensive lineman. Your hands are going to – fingers are going to be going all different types of ways. And a lot of guys, you can get surgeries to fix it, but I was the same way. You kind of say, hey, you know, it's a rite of passage, Jim. We're not taking any pretty photos on our wedding days with our wedding ring. There's some guys can't even get their wedding ring on their correct finger because it's so messed up. So,
well, I'm going to throw a name out that was even before my time, Landon, believe it or not. A guy by the name of Chuck Bednarik. I think he's the one who had just the incredible hands. But I'll give you another name. This is a name when I grew up at my local high school, Berwick. I'll throw the name out there. A gentleman by the name of Paul Stenko. He was the gym teacher. He and was there for 1,000 years. But he actually played in the NFL for the Chicago Bears. Okay. And he would, in his office, he had one picture up, just one picture. It was from his NFL days. And there's one bear there, him, and about 8 different Redskins in a fight, in a brawl. And he was so proud of it. But when he would shake your hand, I swear, Landon, his fingers were about the size of my wrist. And he was the nicest gentleman in the world, but you did not mess with him. It was like the first day of class, if someone acted up, and again, this is old school, he could just grab your shirt, by your chest, pick them up against the locker. That was it. Everyone behaved for the rest of the school year. So
I can't imagine how many lawsuits that would draw nowadays.
it's a different world. But it is. Again, he was the nicest gentleman in the world. He was fantastic, great guy. But it gave me a feel for what an offensive lineman look like and how just thick was the way I would describe him in every way, including his hands. All right, let's move on from that, Landon. I said we'd hit a lot of different news and notes today. Wanted to ask you about, we've got a legacy that just committed to Penn State, LeVar Arrington II, raised in California. He's making his way over to Penn State. Now, a three-star recruit. I think the first thing people have to realize is this is not his dad, right?
Yeah, I think it's definitely going to be a little difficult for LeVar Arrington II at first. They call him Man. That was the nickname he got growing up. And so, I think he's going to come in. And looking at the number situation, first off, Abdul Carter wears 11. Abdul Carter is out of here after this year. Man comes in this coming year after this season. So 11 is wide open. I don't think Tony Rojas will want 11. He's kind of he'll be going into his last year most likely, as long as he has a good sophomore year campaign. I don't think he'll want to make that switch over to 11. So what does that leave? That leaves 11 wide open. I think 11 will probably go to LeVar Arrington Jr. Now, where a little bit of a problem arises for him, and even LeVar even said this, he did a sit down last week, and he said, hey, he is a three-star recruit. He is a little bit of a project. He's going to take some time before he plays here. So LeVar acknowledges that. He doesn't think he's going to be some freshman phenom. But I think there a little bit of a problem is that he is going to have the same name as his dad. He's going to have the same number as his dad and pretty much play the same position as his dad. So all of this, you're basically your dad exactly, except he's just not as good as a player as his dad. I mean, that's just the frank truth. They called it the LeVar leap. I mean, he was a crazy madman, and he is Penn State. So, it's very exciting, and I think LeVar is going to be around a lot more. I think it's overall good for the program, but I just am worried about the kid himself. I just don't want him to get overshadowed too much just coming to Penn State. And like I said, all those similarities between him and his dad. But I'm really excited. He's a good kid. I've met him before. He's definitely going to be good. As far as a player on the field, put all that aside, I definitely think he is someone who's valuable and, can be a pass rusher slash kind of that stand-up outside linebacker, something similar to Abdul Carter where he can kind of do both. So I'm excited to see what he's going to turn into. But I just feel bad because I just feel like those expectations are always going to be higher and higher. And even if he keeps meeting them, they continue to be raised until you get to where your dad is, which is, basically one of the best linebackers in college football. It's not an easy bar to hit, Jim, but hopefully he can do it for us. I would love it. I would love if he was right up there with his dad.
Well, yes, I think we all would, of course. But I think also as a fan base, we've got to be careful with it, that especially it was like when Abdul Carter was given the number 11. It's not the same as having the name LeVar Arrington, but you're carrying on that legacy. So there was a lot of pressure. And Penn State would not have given him that number unless they felt he could carry that load, carry that burden. And as you pointed out, with Abdul Carter moving on after this season, which we know will be the case, that opens up that number 11. And there isn't necessarily another player who's the logical choice for it. So no one made the number more famous. I know there were several good players who wore it, but LeVar was number 11. So you'd think that's what's coming next for him. I hope the fans just understand and don't put that kind of expectation level on him.
I think it's natural to happen. And there's certain circumstances where the son exceeds the dad. I just think it's hard when LeVar probably, outside of a couple other guys, Kajana Carter, it's just like he is one of like the four or five faces of Penn State. I went around and asked people actually around town. I said, who is your Mount Rushmore of Penn State? And I think LeVar was in almost every single answer. So we're talking about a guy who is Penn State football. It is hard, like I said, when you have the same name, number, position as that person. It's kind of hard to live up to those expectations. So, but I'm excited to see what he's going to do. Hopefully he can kind of block some of that out, and I hope the fan base doesn't put too much pressure on him and let him develop, let him understand, hey, you got time, you can redshirt, all of that is okay. And hopefully he turns out to be a damn good player for us, Jim.
Of course, yeah, we're all rooting for him. But again, anytime there's these freshmen coming in, we all want them to achieve something. We like the new guys coming in, and we're hoping so. And someone with the name of LeVar Arrington, of course, we want them to succeed. All right. I wanted to ask you about some different things going on. And I know we don't have much time left in this segment. Penn State had themselves a wonderful recruiting month in June. It was great. A lot of big time players. But when you start to do the comparison, there's a team, you and I both took note of this article about those Oregon Ducks, that they have Phil Knight, the founder of Nike. He's their sugar daddy. He's their guy who can provide all that money. Oregon is creating a scary program out there, aren't they, Landon?
Yeah, they're adding. I just saw, I mean, this past recruiting cycle, they are killing it, adding four stars, high five stars. I mean, it's getting scary. It's getting to the point where, I mean, we talked about this. If you have unlimited money and you do it correctly, you can build a really scary program. Now, there is that fine line of just, and we've talked about this extensively, of just dumping money onto a team. That is not going to work. But you have a team that's doing pretty well. You know, Oregon is making that change from Bo Nix down to someone a little bit lesser, probably. I mean, Bo Nix went in the first round. But, you know, they are still an elite team. I think when you throw money at an elite team that is coached very well, that's going to turn out a lot better than a team that is kind of, you know, you don't know what's going to happen, throwing money at a bunch of young kids. We saw that with A&M, a couple other places. Miami doesn't really turn out well. I think it could turn out really well for the Oregon Ducks. So I'm interested to see how that's all going to shape out, just dumping money in from one of the most powerful people with Phil Knight.
By the way, when we start up in quarter number two, I'm going to throw some numbers at you to try and quantify this a little bit. We'll get to that when we come back.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, General Manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.
Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Bobby Rahal Honda of State College. Visit us at our West College Avenue showroom or at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com. Allow us to demonstrate our commitment to excellence. Bobby Rahal Honda of State College, driven by a higher standard.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Landon, I'm Jim. And what quarter is this, Landon?
Quarter three, Jim. I called Jim out. He didn't realize. It's all right. It's all right, Jim. He said quarter two at the end. We're headed into quarter three. I know you want to spend more and more time with me. You're just trying to prolong it. But, you know, we're in quarter three now. So let's move on.
I do appreciate you, Landon, pointing out my failings. I really do.
I'll always be here for that, Jim.
you're a guy. All right, Landon. Our show, by the way, is brought to you by Bobby Rahal Honda State College. That's the place that's the great dealership. It's where I bought my Honda CRV. I traveled 90 miles to State College. There's a lot of Honda dealerships between here and there, Landon, but that's where I went because they had the best deal on my Honda CRV, and they gave me the best buying experience. Matt, who's the manager over there, was fantastic. Evan was my sales guy. Fantastic also. Just a great experience. So you're in the market for a new Honda. Check them out. Even if you have to travel a little bit, it's worth it. Check them out. Their showroom is on West College Avenue. But if you want to go online first, that's what I did. Go to Bobby Rahal Honda of StateCollege.com. Trust me, a great buying experience. Okay, Landon. Where did I leave things for us after quarter number two? I was going to give you some numbers, wasn't I?
Yeah, you're going to give me some Oregon Duck numbers. Sounds like some money numbers.
Let me give – well, not money. Actually, okay. Tell you how good their recruiting has been. I've talked to you about Ohio State, Georgia, Alabama. They're always at the top of the recruiting pile. Let me tell you first about where Penn State is with their 2025 class. And I know – what's typically used is the five-star and four-star thing. I don't like those numbers because there's about 30 guys who are five-stars, and then about 300 guys that are four stars, okay? I think the numbers are disproportionate. I think a better way to looking at how well recruiting is doing, I do them by, here's the top 100, here's the next 100, the following 100, okay? So I think anyone who is in that top 100, that's an elite player. You're either a five-star or a very high four-star. I think that's a better measurement. And then if you're in the top 200, that's still a really, really good player. Penn State has three players in the top 200 and one player in the top 100. And I think he's like number 96, something like that, Landon, okay? That's Penn State. Let me give you Oregon's numbers. They have nine players in the top 200 and four in the top 100. Now, they are, I believe they have 15 commits versus Penn State having 20 or so. So Oregon still has more openings to bring guys in. But that gives you an idea of how Oregon is recruiting.
Yeah, and I think there will be some signing day, as we say, bags being thrown at kids, some cash money bags being thrown around right around signing day to maybe flip some guys and bring some guys in last second for Oregon. Yeah, it's powerful nowadays when you have a blank checkbook. It's, you know, you're able to do a lot, and that's the name of this game. And I remember Nick Saban. I saw something he was talking about when he retired. He sat down with his wife after a home visit. And they, you know, she said they just, everybody, all these parents, they keep asking how much money. He said they're not worried about what their kid is going to develop into as a man, as a football player, the education they're going to get. The only questions we get is how much money are they going to make? So, that is the truth. That's the name of the game. It's not really truly what college football used to be anymore. I'm happy, I think deservedly so, but it is a little bit out of hand. But it's just completely changed what recruiting is. It really doesn't matter how good of a recruiter you are. I think we talked about this last week. You still have to be a good recruiter. You still have to be able to relate to the families, to the players, and make them feel at home, make them feel like it's a safe place for their kid. But that almost takes a back seat now. Even if a parent doesn't think this is the best situation for my son, or maybe he won't play for a little bit, but hey, they're offering him double the next guy. Let's go with them. I just think there's being some players being put in bad situations, going to bad situations or situations where they could find themselves elsewhere that maybe they'd get more playing time, a better education. But hey, because they're throwing so much money, let's go there. So I think there is some of that. But yeah, you see with Oregon, they've always done well. They've always had the flashy uniforms. It's fun to go out there. Even I almost fell victim to that, Jim. If it wasn't for COVID, I was going to take a trip out to Oregon. Don't worry, I wasn't going to go there. But I wanted to take the plane out there and go see what Oregon had to offer, put on some of those flashy uniforms. But now, instead of the flashy uniforms, it's a flashy bag of cash, Jim. And I think people like that more than the uniforms.
Well, I'll tell you what, if I were in your shoes, I would have taken that trip also out to Oregon to check it out. And you know what? I keep relaying it for the fans. There are fans who just money has sullied the game. It's terrible. It's awful that there's money in the game, which I think is the wrong approach. I think as fans, you got to look at it like, how would you do this in your own personal life? If you're working a job and somebody else, your competitor, a competitive company comes to you and says, hey, we'll pay you more, you're probably going to listen to that. Now, hopefully you're smart enough to also know, you know, what is your quality of life? You know, do they make you work all crazy hours? Is the boss really difficult to deal with? There's a lot of other issues that come into it. But if they're willing to offer you a lot more money, you are going to listen. And I think another point that you made earlier, Landon, which is important, is there have been some schools who I think wanted to throw money out there to get themselves into the conversation. That's different than these teams that are already established and have a good program, like Oregon and Ohio State, but you also give them the dollars and cents advantage. That just adds to an already really good program.
Yeah, I think there is that interesting contrast for donors of, if you're a donor of a team that hasn't really been that good, hey, I want to give money so my team's good. But you're not likely, I feel like, to give as much. I feel like if you are a donor of a team that has already been good and the NIL happens, it's like, okay, now we really got a chance to make this thing great. And the donors feel more comfortable because they feel like they're definitely going to get that return. Because even if you know, Ohio State, let's say they dumped in, we know they've said they gave a roundabout number, but let's say it's around 8 to 10 million on the players for this year. As a donor, you know, Ohio State's probably going to end up in the playoffs and they're probably going to win a couple games. And I honestly think it's probably national championship or bust for them. But as a donor, you don't feel bad if they go to the national championship game and lose or maybe lose in the semifinals. It's still, hey, I'm willing to dump more money in again. You know, for the most part, I would say, I think, you know, Ohio State might be an extreme choice because I do think they are kind of natty or bust. But a lot of these top teams, if the team is going to do pretty well regardless. So, you know, the donors, it's kind of like, okay, I feel good about giving more again. A donor gives once in 2023, their team sucks that year. Are you going to go back and give again, Jim? I mean, your team's not even close to sniffing the playoffs. And let's say I just gave $1 million. Am I going to give $1 million again because my team lost? You know, the other teams, they're still winning, so they're going to get that money. But, I think it's hard for, you know, NIL definitely presents an opportunity. We've seen how many new teams are in the college football playoffs just these past couple of years with TCU, Texas, Washington. NIL has definitely broadened that where it's not just Alabama, Georgia, and Ohio State. But there also is that fall off of, hey, you know, we dumped money in the program. You suck for 1 year. You're not getting that money again from the same donors. You better find some different people or new people because they're just not going to provide the same thing they provided before after you didn't provide what they wanted. You lost too much.
Well, and that's where those teams that are Texas A&M, we always bring them up. But some of these other Southeast Conference schools, Ole Miss, Missouri, they're at that next level, but it seems like their programs are putting more money into their program. They want to see results from it. And if they don't, there's going to be trouble.
Yeah, I think Ole Miss is honestly a great example. I would say if they like flop and if they don't make the playoffs, Ole Miss doesn't make the playoffs, I think that would be a huge loss and the donors would not be happy. As it seems like there has been money just pumped into that program. We saw what happened. They were bringing in all these five stars, transfer portal, Judkins, their star running back with 1 year left. He decided to kick on over to Ohio State. He said, hey, you're not going to value me. Dump enough money into me. I'm going to go ahead and go somewhere else. You know, I do think they'll miss him, but they are pretty much the number one air raid attack. So they're not going to miss him as much. But, you know, I think that's a great team to talk about. And from a standpoint of if they do not deliver, I don't know if the donors come back around, Jim.
That is the trouble. I gave you the numbers comparing Penn State to Oregon. Can I throw Ohio State's numbers in here into the mix for you, Landon?
We got to play them every year, Jim, so let's see it.
All right. I told you, Penn State had three top 200, one top 100. Oregon, 9 and 4, okay? 9 top 200, 4 top 100. Ohio State, 14 top 200 and 10 top 100. Including three of the top six or seven in the country.
Three out of the top six or seven.
Yes.
I think one of them is a quarterback too. I'm pretty certain he is. I think it's like Dia Bell. It's one of those. One of them is a five star.
In between segments, I'll look it up real fast. Not incredible?
It's incredible, and it's scary. I mean that. You will see the effects of that. That's what I will say. If you recruit like that, you are simply going to win. So it sounds like Ohio State's doing really well in the recruiting game. Don't like to hear that as a Penn State fan, Jim. You're ruining my the end of my 4th of July weekend. Those are staggering numbers. I mean, we're not talking – the Oregon was a little bit different. It was like, okay, you know, they got us beat. But, I mean, this is someone that we virtually have to play every year. Not every – you know, there's kind of that back and forth between Michigan and Ohio State now because of the schedules. But, I mean, that's scary, Jim.
It is, Landon. And I think that's one of the things – and I'm not going to use this as an excuse for never beating Ohio State because I think last season especially was an opportunity that Penn State had enough talent to match up with them on the field. But – when you hear the conversation, why can't James Franklin beat Ohio State? Well, this is the reason. you know, there is a distinct advantage at Ohio State, and it's the same thing for Alabama and Georgia. If you look up the history of recruiting over the last decade, decade and a half, every year Alabama is first or second. Penn State had the 1 year, 22 was it, where they were top six or seven, and it was that great recruiting class. Well, guess what? There were five schools that did better than them in Penn State's best year. That's what they're up against, Landon. That is it for quarter number three. Come back. We've got more in quarter number four. Stay tuned.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, General Manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.
Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Bobby Rahal Honda of State College. Visit us at our West College Avenue showroom or at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com. Allow us to demonstrate our commitment to excellence. Bobby Rahal Honda of State College, driven by a higher standard.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number four of our show. He's Landon, I'm Jim. We're talking about a lot of different things in football. Real quick, as a wrap on our conversation about where Ohio State, Oregon, and Penn State sit on the recruiting trail, it's actually, I did the lookup. Ohio State has three of the top six players in the country, at least by one ranking. The first one, he's ranked like number two. He is a quarterback. And then they have guys who are ranked fourth and sixth in the country who are both cornerbacks. I think their cornerback room is going to be in pretty good shape for the next couple of years, Landon.
I think so. And we know their wide receiver room is going to stay up to par for them, which is the best in the country. So, yeah, we got some work to do on the recruiting trails, Jim.
Yes, we do. All right, let's move on. I wanted to ask you about this. There was a quote from Drew Aller this week. And there was a whole article, multiple quotes, but one of them really struck me, Landon. Essentially, he talked about the leadership this year in the wide receiver room. And he pointed out specifically Trey Wallace, Liam Clifford, Julian Fleming as the guys. They are leading the way, and they're way ahead of where they were a year ago. Is he talking more about this year's team or last year's team, Landon?
Yeah, you know, it might have been a little bit of a shot there at our boy Keiondre Lambert-Smith, something like that, Dante Cephas, and the boys. But, hey, rightfully so. And I'm, you know, Drew really took a lot of the credit from the fans, and not, I guess, credit, a lot of the slack in a bad way. You know, he got name called, all that stuff, for the lack of just the passing game. It just was really lacking the whole year. And I think there was a lot that went on Drew Aller, but no one, not too many people talked about the wide receivers and what they were not providing. I mean, everybody said, hey, you know, they need to create a little bit more separation, or, but it was, you know, Drew needs to throw deep, et cetera. He needs to not be scared. You know, hey, there is a lot of quarterbacks out there that rely on their wide receivers to create some separation. I mean, you go watch any game last year for JJ McCarthy or Kyle McCord. Roman Wilson was getting open for JJ McCarthy, and Marvin Harrison was getting open for Kyle McCord. And if he wasn't open, Kyle could just throw it up and Marvin Harrison was going to go get it anyways. So Drew, and I've talked about this, Drew didn't have that. I think there not only was there a lack of trust in the wide receivers, like there was times where it felt like guys were not where they needed to be. I've watched a lot of the film. There was, especially in the Michigan game, there was a lot of times the wide receivers almost ran into each other on their routes. And if you know, that is not okay. The wide receivers should not really be anywhere near each other when they're running their routes. So, you know, I definitely think they're, you know, his quote, I don't really think he was putting too much of a shot at the guys. It was more propping up the guys that are there now. But we need to have an elite production year from these guys, whether that be Julian Fleming and Trey Wallace, which I do think those are the two biggest candidates. I'm a huge Trey Wallace fan. I've even talked to some NFL agents about him. They think he could easily be one of those top guys in the wide receiver room if he has the year he can. Just has to stay healthy. But I think his jumping ability, his ability to create separation is something that Drew Aller really hasn't had yet. Drew got to throw to Parker Washington a little bit, but outside, I mean, that's the best wide receiver that Drew has gotten to throw to is Parker Washington, and not really in any type of important game has he gotten to do that. So I'm excited to see what these guys can be and what they can develop into for Drew this year, because Drew does deserve. He deserves some help, and with an offensive line that is going to take a step back this year a little bit, I mean, it's just the frank truth of it, especially those two new tackles, he needs to have some help from these wide receivers. So hopefully those guys that Drew mentioned, Liam, Julian, Trey, can step up and really provide for him and go make some plays for him.
Yes, he does need some help from the wide receivers. And I don't want to overplay a single play that I really studied and looked at. Is so often, as I put it, I hate when we hear the announcer say, well, the quarterback and receiver, we're on a different page. Well, you know, help me out. Help me figure out where the issue is. It's probably not both of them. It's probably one of them. So I took a look at a replay of one of these plays. And again, that's me maybe cherry picking, doing it on one play where it looked like I'm calling it an option play where a receiver runs down the field 10, 15 yards and has his choice of cutting in or cutting out. He cut in and Drew threw the ball out. Okay. Obvious. And the announcers, well, they're not on the same page. Well, if you watch the replay of it, and I'm assuming the receiver makes his cut based on where the defender is. If Absolutely. The defender has inside coverage, you go out. If he has outside coverage, you cut in. Well, guess what? It was blatant obvious to me sitting up in the press box, Landon. The defender had inside coverage. You cut out, not in.
Yeah.
Guess what the receiver did, and guess where Drew threw the ball?
Yeah, I think you think back to Michigan, like fourth and, when we went for it on fourth and five, I think it was fourth and five, fourth and six on our own 30-yard line, and Drew threw a pass over the middle, and everybody was like, where the hell was that going? Who were you throwing that to? It's like, you really think Drew Aller on fourth and five is just going to throw a pass over the middle to just open space? No, if you go back and look, one of the wide receivers cut out, like you said, on like a corner route instead of cutting in on an in route, and do we think the quarterback is wrong? I think that is easily the most prepared person on the field. Now, there is that miscommunication of the judgment, like you said, is where's the cornerback lining up? Is he inside? Is he outside leverage? But for the most part, I would guess that the quarterback is generally right when those mishaps happen, because just they are so well prepared and need to know exactly what's going on everywhere on the field. So if you go back and look, yeah, if you ever see a quarterback, what the heck was that? I'd say the majority of the time, it was some type of mess up by the wide receiver, unless we're talking about the Pittsburgh Steelers, Jim. I just got to fit this in. Kenny Pickett had some ridiculous errant throws. I'm glad he's gone. I'm glad he's on your Eagles. I had to throw that out there. We got Russell Wilson. He's going to take us to the Super Bowl. I don't know. That came out of nowhere. I was just thinking about Kenny Pickett because he had some really bad throws, because I'm thinking it's always the wide receiver's fault. Unless it's Kenny Pickett, then it might not be, Jim.
I don't know, Landon. My Eagle coach has said he had a wonderful camp.
I did hear that. Well, we'll see.
We will see there. All right. Give you a little bit different topic. Oh, I don't have it in front of me. I'm not sure who put this out, Landon, but it was a very interesting graph or chart. It showed your team, throughout college football, how many wins do they need to be in the conversation for an at-large bid for the college football playoffs. And what I really appreciated about it, Landon, is it was the first place that really acknowledged that schedules are very different. You might need to win more games with this schedule than with that schedule. If you're in the Big 12 or the ACC, you probably better win 11 games type of deal. And there, I suspect that there's going to be a lot of teams with two losses and there's going to be tiebreakers. But it had Penn State on the two-loss list. Now, it wasn't saying guarantee if they win 10 games, lose two, they'll make the playoffs. But that's what they need to do to be in consideration. What's your thought on that?
Yeah, I think that's a fair take. I would say it's right around 10. I think we could sneak in. What, we would have to be 9-3 That's borderline. I think we would find ourselves right outside of the playoffs, especially if we lose three games and we're not playing Michigan. I think we find ourselves outside of the playoffs. And I think we lose one to Ohio State and then drop one to either like at USC. Hopefully I can't really think of any other games where we really are at too much of a, you know, little bit of a panic. I think we should be favored in every other game we play outside of Ohio State. So I think that's fair. I think you could drop one and be that, you know, 10th, maybe 11th team. So I definitely think we win 10 games, we're in. But I think you drop down to 9. I think this is absolutely right. I don't think we make it with 3 losses. Someone that I find interesting too, though, Jim, we come back to Penn State in a second, but Florida is the only 8-team win that's, they say, you know, eight wins would be enough for them. And you look at the schedule, oh my God, if you are a Florida fan, I am so sorry. You start out with Miami. That's all right. Texas A&M is pretty good. UCF can be decent. Kentucky, Texas, Ole Miss. Then you come back, you get some Samford, so you get a little break. And then you got, you know, Mississippi State, Tennessee, Georgia, LSU, Florida State. I mean, that is a packed schedule. I can see when I look down, Jim, I really didn't know their schedule. I looked down, I said, well, Florida's the only 8-win team. I wonder what their schedule looks like. If you win 8 games with that schedule, playing, you know, Tennessee, Georgia, Kentucky, Texas, Ole Miss. I mean, these are it's insane how many great teams they have to play. So I think that's a fair assessment that they're the only team that can win 8 games and still do it. But you see a lot of 9-win SEC teams that could, you know, lose 3 games and still get in because they play in the SEC.
My take on it, I don't think any 3-loss teams are going to make it unless they win their conference. You know, somehow an ACC or Big 12 team lost 3 games, but, you know, made it to their conference championship game and won. Florida, as you point out, within the conference, Georgia, Texas, Ole Miss, many people think those are 3 top 10 teams. Then you add Florida State and Miami, who are out of conference, but I can't see, I understand why he put that out there, but I think he's wrong. I don't think you could lose 4 games. Kane, I don't think you can lose 3 games and make it. I would not be surprised, Landon, if you could lose, if there are teams who will be 2 lost teams and will not make it. Okay. And I think Penn State, I'm not sure it's a guarantee with 2 losses, because the way the Southeast Conference schedule looks, for some people, they have some very attractive schedules. And it just works out for them. I think Missouri is one of those teams that has a favorable schedule. You know, they don't play Georgia. They don't play Ole Miss. You know, they don't play LSU. They do play Alabama, but they don't have as many of those kind of games. And it's really advantageous to them. So that's where, you know, Penn State, I think they got to be careful when and where they lose that second game if they do lose to Landon.
Yeah, it could be a similar situation to that, you know, that 2016 where that random Pitt loss that really shouldn't happen really affect. I mean, if we win that game, we're in the college football playoffs. It could be something similar where if we have a bad loss, you're right, at 10-2. I think that is possible that they could bump us out. I need to take a look at the standings from this past year and how many 3-loss teams were inside the top 12. But, you know, I do think there is – I think you're right. I mean, Florida – I understand why Florida, this guy put them at 8 wins. But, it, you know, there is – you have to win 11 games to be definitely in the college football playoffs.
We may have to talk about this again but while looking at the schedules, Landon. But, unfortunately, we are out of time for today. Thank you all for listening. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, General Manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.